Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake. Happy Christmas.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now just 273 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. It means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies, TV shows, and nonsense all year round. Hi, everybody. My name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Johnny Five, the Human Robot.
Yo, what's up?
What's going on, John? And our friend Bradford is a bit under the weather, but he popped in for just a minute to say hi to everybody. Say hi, Brad.
Hi, my name is Brad. I am a big dumb baby and can't podcast today. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba. Happy Christmas.
Okay, Brad, you sound, yeah, just go back to bed. You don't sound great.
Yeah, everybody else who does this podcast was smart enough to fake sick. Look at me. I'm the asshole. Who's here?
Well, that makes two of us. We're the idiots that watched the thing and then still decided to do the thing.
Fucking watch this thing.
Okay, so real quick, before we start the show tonight, I'll say this. This has been kind of on the back burner for a couple of years for various and sundry reasons. One of which being, 2 years ago around Christmas, I bought up a bunch of cheap DVDs off Amazon because I saw they were having a fire sale on Christmas movies, and this was one of them. So that's really the only excuse we have, and it's taken us 2 years to get around to doing it because
like fucking Bonfire the Vanity Sale. Burn this shit.
It's a madhouse. We've entered the madhouse of Christmas horrors tonight on the show, and I'm sure you can tell that like John and I are not in the best headspace because this thing put us in a really weird mood.
It's 85 minutes that felt like 3 hours.
It really did. It took up most of my Sunday morning, if I'm being perfectly honest, because I had to stop it at several points, partly to take notes because I needed to record this for posterity, but also just to get my head straight and reacquaint myself with, I don't know, man. I just, tonight on the podcast, we're talking about the 2006 live action version of A Year Without a Santa Claus, which is a remake, a live action remake, mind you, of a Rankin-Bass animated special from 1974.
Four.
Thank you.
Is this even one of the Rankin-Bass specials that people like?
I know there are lots of Rankin-Bass specials out there. There's like 20 of them, like the official whatever they've made over the years. I feel like this is like one of the, in the echelon of ones people care about, this is like the last one.
Yeah, like, it's not Rudolph, it's not Frosty, it's not Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and when you get below that, it's pretty much like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right, because then you're getting into, like Nestor the Donkey, and
Rudolph's Shitty New Year, and
yeah, and then I think they made a couple of Hobbit movies that happened at Christmas or something, I don't know. But yeah, Rankin-Bass kind of went on a tear in the 70s and 80s with this stuff, and for whatever reason we do wind up watching a lot of these over and over again at Christmas, and this is one of those that I guess people like it and remember well enough to have made a live action remake of it, because you know, you notice they're not making remakes of the Easter Bunny's Coming to Town or friggin
Nestor the Goal Kicking Mule or whatever.
Or the garbage-picking, field-goal-kicking Philadelphia phenomenon.
Yeah, it seems like this is probably that weird middle ground where it's like, this isn't one of the ones that people like, where they'll get really mad if we mess with it. But at the same time, it's one people recognize the name of it, so they'll watch it just on name recognition.
Exactly. And that's probably why they made it. Because this premiered on NBC in 2006 in prime time. With an, at the time, I guess it was an all-star cast. Nowadays, it's just like a bunch of like who's who, like who are these people, and also John Goodman. But
yeah, like a lot of these people probably should have known better. I mean, it's not like the thing was a big budget thing where it's some Michael Caine Jaws 4 shit where it's like, I've not seen the movie, but I've seen the castle it bought. Like, this is a fucking made-for-TV Christmas movie. There's no money in it.
Right, like, sure, Chris Kattan probably was taking any gig he could get, and Harvey Fierstein was just glad to be back on TV. But, like John Goodman and Eddie Griffin and Michael McKean, like, what are you guys doing in this thing anyway? I really don't understand it.
Let's name some names here. Let's name some shames.
Let's start reading off the naughty list here. I guess the only way to start this is to just talk about the cast because, good lord. All right, so John Goodman plays Santa Claus, and I want to note that this is the only time John Goodman has played Santa Claus in live action, and that's a goddamn shame. Because he's pretty good. He's a pretty good Santa Claus, all things considered.
Yeah, when he's not just trying to like outdo Tim Allen for like the grumpiest asshole to ever put on a Santa suit,
right?
Because he spends the first half of the movie doing that, just being like worst Tim Allen, basically.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, worst Tim Allen is kind of just John Goodman's whole thing, anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's played Santa in a couple other things too. Like all of them.
Futurama.
Yeah, Futurama. He played Santa in Futurama. He did it in SpongeBob, and I think he did it in like an animated Rankin Bass special at some point. But yeah, John Goodman's here as Santa Claus, and he is super bummed out that the kids don't care about Christmas anymore, and all they want is video games and more. And he calls himself a toy delivery division of Santa Co., which apparently is what he is now, because the whole Santa's toy shop complex has become this like weird corporation that is being run by Sparky the Elf, played by Chris Kattan, who is this smarmy little piece of shit elf who thinks he knows how to run a yearly toy drive better than Santa Claus does. And so he has all of his yes men and his tailors and his idea people like coming up with these schemes and schematics and drawings for like how to improve Santa Claus. And he's got this horrible superhero that he invents called Extreme Santa, which he says,
it's Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern. That's what it is.
It's basically Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern because he says he's like a cross between Tony Hawk and Spider-Man. Yeesh. So Santa decides to take a break from the Santa Claus gig. And
I just want to go over the toy show real quick because it's presented as like, as far as I can tell, what it's supposed to be is it's actually a toy show at the North Pole for all of the weird Santa people and elves and everything.
Yeah, like all of the like Santa adjacent. Each of the elves have like brought their own toy to Santa to get Santa to like distribute to kids.
And they're all like things that like someone whose youngest kid is like 30 thought up basically after watching TV for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And just kind of imitated it because there's like a weird knockoff version of like Bratz or Monster High dolls, except it managed to be worse in every way.
Yeah, they're called Beegoths, and ugh.
Then there's the VR helmet, which when he puts it on, when Santa puts it on, it's supposed to like be like a sensory overload, but if you actually pay attention to it, it's like all it's doing in like the cycle of like so many video games flying at him, it's literally just Soul Calibur, one of the later Mortal Kombats, and IL-2 or something.
Yeah, like a random shooter. Yeah.
And it's just because I saw Soul Calibur like 3 or 4 different times in the montage.
But it's just this proto VR thing that is supposed to be the hot new video game system. And Santa's just like, I can't make heads or tails of it. Why would I want to give this to a child? And one of the other elves like brings him this. It's like a robot toy, but that actually like destroys other robot toys. It's like, this guy fights this guy, and they're both like look the exact same. And he does the whole, like, pew, pew, pew at him, and one of them explodes in his hand.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Spends the first part of this movie just basically being like, I'm old and things are different and that makes me mad. And like, that's basically his character motivation.
Right, yeah.
And the thing that kind of annoyed me about it at the start, it kind of petered off after a bit because the original one was 51 minutes long. This is 85 minutes long, so they just threw extra shit in there. And for the extra shit in there, if you replaced like three or four of the characters with talking dogs, I'd be like, oh, it's another Santa Buddy sequel, because it's the same boilerplate Christmas bullshit.
It looks exactly the same too. Like, it looks just like those movies. Has the same production value. And it has the same like kind of garbage sense of humor. And it's basically a Santa Buddies movie, but instead of six dogs, you got Eddie Griffin and the fat guy from My Name Is Earl.
Pretty much.
So let's talk about those two real quick. Eddie Griffin and Ethan Suplee, they play Jingle and Jangle, or like Santa's personal assistants, I guess. Is that what they do?
No. They are some sort of like, they're elves, but it's they don't work in the toy shop or anything. They very specifically are like his administrative assistants or whatever.
Right, they're basically his gophers.
Yeah.
And they decide that, see, so much of this movie, like, I don't understand why they're going or doing the things they're doing, like the cause and effect. Like, they decide to go to Southtown to help Santa realize that people still care about Christmas.
I understand the reason. Okay. And it's a bad reason, but I understand it. It's because Jingle, Eddie Griffin's character, has a TV and he just watches a shitload of TV, and he ends up seeing a news report about how that fucking kid, Iggy Thistlewhistle.
Yes.
Because in 2006, there's a kid named Iggy. It still has Christmas beard or some shit. And it's the mayor's son, and I just want to dunk his head in a toilet. And it's played by the kid who wears the headphones from 13 Reasons Why. Not the dead kid, the other one.
Yeah, it's Dylan Minnette. It's apparently his first movie, which...
Yeah, I saw the introducing on there.
It's a hell of an auspicious debut, if you ask me.
But he was just playing like a boilerplate, like, oh, it's so cute, we made the kid say multisyllabic words.
Right,
and that's pretty much his character.
And he gives the most like corporate explanation for why he wants to put on like a Christmas festival in town. It's like it's to generate interest in revitalizing downtown and rebuilding the blah blah blah. And what it really is his dad's going to like tear down downtown and rebuild it into like a new mini mall kind of resort. And
yeah, he's gonna make Jojo Mart from Stardew Valley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he doesn't like his child brain doesn't get that this is a bad thing for the town, and the movie doesn't really even go there either. But it's
the movie kind of forgets about this a little bit. Like, he drops the whole like young Republican asshole shtick about like 20 minutes into the movie, and just turns into like, oh, it's the kid lead because this is a movie that has a kid lead in it.
Yeah, exactly. And his whole thing is that he really wants his dad, who is the mayor, to stop working so hard and to just, you know, be a dad to him. And he asks his dad when he's going to stop being, you know, stop running, being the mayor, running the town. And his dad says, oh, when it snows in Southtown. So that's what gives Dylan, that's the actor's name, Iggy, the idea to ask Santa for, well, we'll get there, but he asks Santa for snow in Southtown for Christmas.
Because what he's remembering is a few years before. How old is this kid supposed to be anyway? Like, I think 12, maybe? Like
10 or 12, like that age range.
Because he says a few years ago, they ended up going into the generic mountains for Christmas and got snowed in. And it was the nicest Christmas he ever had because his dad couldn't work for 3 days because the phones were out.
Right.
And his dad's catchphrase that he keeps spouting off is, I may be your father, but I'm also the mayor.
Right.
Which is, I mean, at least it's not as fucking terrible as Jack Frost, where the kid just gets his dad killed.
Yeah, yeah. Like, his dad's got a perfectly valid reason for being busy. Like, he's the mayor.
It's a shitty reason, but it's valid, though.
Right, yeah. Like, and it does this kid movie thing where, like, the kid is depressed that his dad has to go and do dad things, but, like, as an adult watching that, you're like, oh, yeah, he's got a meeting that he's got to go to, and he can't just cancel it. What are you going to do? And it keeps doing this throughout the whole movie. Like, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do it. I'm busy right now.
And it's also that kid movie thing of like, business is just 24/7 happening. You can't just be like, no, I got other shit. Like, if you're the mayor, you could just like be like, no, I'm not scheduling shit right then. I got other shit to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have a schedule. You're not beholden to the whims of anyone who wants to fucking talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can turn off at a certain point, but it's movie logic.
But
movie logic. That's
overall of the people we mentioned so far, the acting is very, it's very playing to the cheap seats, is the best way to put it.
It's very broad and very
big. And very like Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm acting like this because children are watching this and they don't get shit.
Yeah, yeah. speaking of broad acting, so Jingle and Jangle leave with one of Santa's reindeer, Vixen, to Southtown to find this kid and to show Santa that he's, you know, there's still people who care about Christmas, and they have
their goal is to literally show Santa that there's one kid who still has Christmas spirit.
Yeah. When they could have probably just shown Santa that news report and called it a day.
Yeah, because Santa is full on, like, nobody loves me, everyone hates me, guess I'll go
eat worms,
write on my
yeah.
fucking MySpace about it. Because he just, like, holds up in his room and it's not even that he's like, you know, oh, I'm going to take Christmas off this year, let the elves handle it. He's like, no, Christmas is canceled.
Yeah, fuck Christmas. and also, at one point, Santa gets... Okay. We're jumping around a lot here, but there's just so much I want to talk about. There's so much bad stuff that I want to talk about.
Do you want to talk about the tape Santa gets in the mail?
Yes. So there's
of the few bright points.
Mrs. Claus, who's played by Delta Burke, she tries to get, you know, lift Santa's spirits by bringing him a bag of mail, like of mail from kids who are asking Santa for stuff for Christmas. And in the bag of mail is a DVD for a retirement community called Mythopolis.
Which was one of the few bright points in it, because they had fucking Jack LaLanne playing Hercules.
It's Jack LaLanne playing Hercules, introducing Mythopolis, which is a retirement community for mythical figures. And he's like, he's talking about how this is a place where old fables can feel fabulous again. And he shows, the Abominable Snowman is there, and Medusa is there, and they're having a grand old time. It's like a party for...
Yeah, it's really weird, because, like, as far as this movie is concerned, the mythical creatures that exist are Santa, the Abominable Snowman, and a couple of Greek gods.
Yeah. And we actually do meet a couple of them throughout the film for basically no reason.
God knows why.
No, there's no reason. There's absolutely no reason. But, so, Santa wants to retire to Mythopolis, and the missus absolutely will not let him. She's not about that. So Jingle and Jangle are on their mission, and they have to fly through the Miser Brothers territory. And this is where we meet the Miser Brothers. There's the
story. And why are they in this movie? Because it's the year without Santa Claus. That's why.
Because it's the year without Santa Claus. And I feel fairly confident in saying this. Literally, the only thing anybody remembers about a year without a Santa Claus is the Miser Brothers and their stupid song.
I do want to, before we get here, I just want to go, just jump back to one quick thing, because this movie commits the bad movie cardinal sin, where they make you think about how you could be watching a better movie. Because while they're flipping through the TV, trying to find the news report, they land on, first off, not only the original Year Without Santa Claus, but also Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
And it's like, why are you reminding me about the better movie I could be watching right now?
Yeah, yeah. It's
And later on, there's a Christmas Story reference, which, again, why are you reminding me about the better movie I could be watching? I could flip over to TBS right the fuck now and watch this.
Exactly. Like, why on earth would you do this? Why do these bad Christmas movies always seem to want to remind you that Christmas Vacation and Home Alone and Christmas Story, these are things that are out there? And they're just drawing, you know, they're just drawing the comparison, and it's always going to fail for them, because your thing is obviously a piece of shit. And I don't know if it's because they're trying to, like, ride the coattails and, like, make reference to the classics, or if they actually think that it's clever and funny. I really don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, this movie actually does have a sort of connection to Christmas Vacation, though.
A little bit. And we can talk about that a little later, because we're still kind of trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. So, Jingle and Jangle fly past the Miser Brothers, the Snow Miser, who's played by Michael McKean, and the Heat Miser, played by Harvey Fierstein, and they're having their little war between the two that Santa at one point says is going to get a lot of people killed. And it's just like the Snow Miser and his four, like, scantily clad women, and the Heat Miser and his four scantily clad women, and they're just hurling icicles and balls of fire at each other while singing the Miser Brothers song.
Is it two different songs in the original one, or is it one song ran together?
Yeah, in the original, like, they go to they visit each Miser Brother individually, and they both sing the song themselves. And in this one, they kind of, like, merge the two, because I think it was more a perfect excuse to, like, have these two actors in the same room together. Like, why get these guys and then separate them? Let's just put them together and see what happens. So we keep going back to them a couple of times, and every time is dumber than the last. Because the first time we see them, they're hurling insults and barbs at each other. The second time, they're literally boxing in a boxing ring.
Yeah, they've built a boxing ring over the divide. It's just hanging in midair.
Yeah. And they're not even really boxing. They're just like chasing each other around the ring and swinging at each other like crazy
people. Yeah, it's kind of like what a movie like Wrestle Madness thinks pro wrestling is. It's pretty much what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kid movie logic. I hate this. I hate these guys.
So they get the sleigh gets shot down or something, right?
The sleigh gets shot and Eddie Griffin Django loses his little mini TV. And that's like the clue that Santa finds later to figure out where these two guys went.
Yeah, but they end up making it to Southtown anyway and promptly get their reindeer and sled stolen.
Yes, because the lack of Christmas spirit means people automatically steal everything you have. Because at one point Santa is like looking through a viewfinder down onto Southtown and he just sees people hurling snowballs at Christmas carolers and singing about how
Santa
sucks.
My favorite part. There's just a punk guy singing a song like "Santa, you suck."
Yeah, he's like wearing a skull t-shirt and his like hair is spiked up, and he's just singing a song on a street corner about how much Santa sucks, and Santa can hear it.
Which I love it too. This guy has taken great pains to make a song about how much Santa sucks, rather than just not sing a song about Santa. Which is equally not Christmassy.
Right. Right. And he's like busking on a street corner, presumably next to a Salvation Army Santa Claus. And I'm sure people are paying him to sing too. You know? Oh, people love it. Yeah. God.
Oh, God. Who else do we have in here? Carol Kane is Mother Nature, Heat Miser, Snow Miser's mom. She shows up later.
And she's basically doing the same shtick that she did in that movie Scrooged, which we've been talking about covering on the show soon, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, she's back doing her thing, and she sort of shames her two miser boys into cooperating with Santa Claus a couple of times.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
So Eddie Griffin, Ethan Suplee, Jingle and Jangle, respectively, are wandering around town. They eventually find the kid at the school because that's where kids are.
Well,
and
because they're Santa's elves, they're magic, so they just automatically know where Iggy is at all times, which is totally not creepy at all.
Yeah, this movie is weird because there is a character who yells stranger danger, but otherwise it's just these two grown men just hanging around at a school in 2000 goddamn six.
Yeah, like they go to the school because they know that's where Iggy is, and then they get shouted down by, it's their gym coach, but it's also the Greek goddess Artemis, who I don't know. I don't know if it's actually their gym coach, and
No, she's just another creeper because she said like she's doing some. She said like she's the guardian of the youth and blah de blah. And she's like now she does freelance youth guarding, right. AKA she just shows up at the school.
Right. So I don't know if like if Artemis is in fact their gym coach or if she's just like going around doing gym coach stuff, because that's her gig now. Why include this? What's the point? What's the purpose? Also, Ethan Suplee is like giving her like goo goo eyes because this.
It doesn't go anywhere either. It's just hey, what can we do that'll fill 45 seconds of this movie?
Yeah, and done about 100 times. Like they have to figure out a way to they start a scene and they have to figure out a way to fill that scene with sound and noise to waste 100 minutes of your time so that we can fill it with commercials later. That's the whole gig of this movie. It's just filling time so that we can stuff it with commercials. Anyway, so Jingle and Jangle tail Iggy to the local arcade where they decide that they have to win his trust by showing how cool they are and how good they are at all the video games. And they do this.
And also, they somehow get into the arcade despite being grown men unaccompanied by a child.
Yeah, which you're definitely not allowed to do in most states.
No, it's mainly because Chuck E. Cheese is about the only arcade around anymore, and Chuck E. Cheese is super like, no, you're not coming in unless you got a kid with you, which is why Dave and Buster's exist, so you can get drunk and play skee-ball.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But these guys go in, and they immediately latch onto Arctic Thunder, and they, you know, they hit it, they bonk it on the head like Fonzie does, and they get free games, and they start playing it, and snow starts blowing out of it because they're elves, and it's magic, and that's fun. And all the kids and start also, crowding around them to, like, cheer him on because they're playing Arctic Thunder, and kids love Arctic Thunder, right?
Also because, for some reason, even though it's a video game, it's rigged up to the ticket dispenser.
Yeah.
And they also just make it shoot out infinite tickets.
I don't get that. Hey, there's a TV commercial on right now for Chuck E. Cheese. No, it's not Chuck E. Cheese. It's a Progressive insurance ad. And Flo from Progressive is, like, berating this guy who's, like, at a Chuck E. Cheese, and he's playing a motorcycle game. And the kids are yelling at him because you're an adult and you should be at work. And at the end of the commercial, the guy, like, grabs his tickets and leaves and, like, throws them in the kids' faces. And I'm like, these racing games don't give tickets. Why? Obviously, the people who made these things have not been to an arcade in 20 years. Because racing games do not dispense tickets.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, like, the last time I went to an arcade that did ticket dispensing and actually dispensed tickets.
Right.
It was skee-ball, basketball, and all of the shit that the entire point of it was ticket gambling.
Yeah, exactly. Like the ticket carousel.
Like there was the one where the lights go around in a circle and you have to hit the button and you never get the timing right because it's rigged.
Yeah.
That thing. And yeah, but like other than that, it's just skee ball and basketball and that's it. You don't get it from regular games.
Yeah. Like you don't get tickets for playing fucking Pac-Man, you know? Which I wish, like, I'm pretty good at Pac-Man. I would get a shitload of tickets on Pac-Man, but they don't do that. It doesn't happen. I'm sure we could just yell about arcades for the next 20 minutes and fill up the rest of this podcast, but there's still, like, half a movie to talk about.
God, there is half a movie to talk about still.
So anyway, these Jingle and Jangle they're slowly convincing Iggy that they're not only his friends, but also actually Santa's elves, because Eddie Griffin keeps referencing Dr. Laura Schlesinger and, like, what would she say about making friends? And at one point she does show up in the film, but it's more just like they're making up bullshit advice that they think this person would give them. And it's always,
I think the idea is he's repeating what she said on the show because he watches too much TV, but her advice apparently is basically, just keep annoying them and they'll be your friend.
Yeah. Which, it does work. I mean, that approach is valid.
To go back to Stardew Valley, that's how it works in Stardew Valley. You give someone a gift 2 times a week, and then they'll marry you.
Well, if that's all it takes, well, then tell.
Sorry, I started playing Stardew Valley again last night, and it's funny, like, how as ham-fisted as the JoJo Mart thing is in Stardew Valley of, like, the evil corporation taking over, it's even more ham-fisted in this movie.
Yeah, because it keeps cutting back to the North Pole and the saga of Spanky taking over Christmas.
Sparky.
I'm going to call him Spanky. Fuck it. Chris Kattan, Spanky. You know what? It fits. He's a little monkey dude. So Sparky, he's got his Extreme Santa outfit on, and he's, like, trying to hide it from Mrs. Claus because he's going to be the new cool Santa 2000 this year. And she doesn't like that, and he doesn't want her to know that he's taking over.
Because Santa goes from not wanting to do Christmas to being like, well, fuck, now I gotta go find Jingle and Jangle, and he leaves.
Right, he's gone. So the missus kind of has to, like, keep things in order while he's out.
So what she does is she interrogates a random third elf who admits that Jingle and Jangle ran off towards the divide and said, don't tell anyone where we're going. He tells Santa that. That's how Santa ends up at the boxing match where Mother Nature shows up and, like, kink shames her sons.
and so he,
finds
so
out that they're going to
Southtown. To Southtown as well.
Which, again, it's like one of those movies of, like, oh, well, we have to do some shit in town and be elves and Santa in town because that's what we do in this movie.
Right. And so I think we established that Vixen gets immediately caught and taken to the pound.
By animal control because she assaults a police officer.
Yes. So Jingle and Jangle convince Iggy to go and get Vixen out of the pound because he's the mayor's son and he has pull over that kind of thing. So Iggy goes into the pound and talks to the dog catcher and the dog catcher offers him a beer. And Iggy's like, no. And so the dog catcher then shotguns the entire beer right in front of him.
Yeah, and Iggy's response is just like, roll eyes, drinking on the job again. No, Iggy, your response is, I'm the mayor's son. I could have you fucking fired yesterday.
I could have you run out of town on a rail. And you know what? I'm the mayor's son. I know where they sell rails.
Kid, I own the police.
Yeah, well, I own you. Anyway, so Iggy tries to, he sweet talks him, which is weird. Like, you know, I would really like a reindeer for our Christmas festival, but I'm not the owner and I don't have any paperwork or anything. And the guy's like, hell, who needs paperwork? And he pulls up his shirt and he's got a tattoo on his belly that says, life's too short for paperwork. Which, yeah, I definitely screen capped and put on Twitter earlier today.
Gee, thanks.
And you know what? The one honest moment in this movie right there. Life is too short for paperwork. He's absolutely right. If we're going to give this points later on, I'm going to give at least award it 1 point for being truthful for about 10 seconds.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. So where do we go now? Santa.
Iggy's got Vixen. They've got him back. And Santa arrives. Santa starts talking to people around town, trying to look for Jingle and Jangle. He sees... Yeah,
he follows their trail, more or less. Like, he finds the cop that had Vixen put in the pound. Then he gets to the pound. Then he gets led to Iggy. But when he goes to the pound and yells at the drunk guy at the pound, the drunk guy's like, yeah, if you're Santa, why don't you give me a BB gun? And Santa... references a Christmas story. He's like, because you'll shoot your eye out.
And then he makes fun of him by like pantomiming like how that would have gone down.
Which that just seems like a fucking John Goodman ad lib of like, oh, that's right, I'm playing asshole Santa. Might as well do this.
Oh my eye, that's you, stupid. But yeah, he definitely does the Christmas story thing. Because why not? Even if we're gonna show Christmas Vacation, we might as well reference the other thing too.
Yeah,
but also in this part of the film, Santa starts like talking to the people around town and realizing that people in their own small ways do still care about Christmas. Because like he's at one point he comes across a Salvation Army Santa who looks a little disheveled. So Santa gives him his real Santa hat and kind of fixes him up a little bit and says, here, you need this more than I do. And as he turns to walk away, the Salvation Army Santa, you know, says, it lets him know that he knows he's the real Santa and says, oh, the kids down at the orphanage are looking forward to seeing you tonight. And Santa kind of realizes that, oh, that's right. I have kind of an obligation to these people. And
yeah, which is another thing that always baffles me about movies like that is like, since when do people not give a shit about Christmas?
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Like, people can be too busy for the holidays, and they might have their personal reasons for not wanting to celebrate or to observe whatever holiday that they do. But, you know, there's plenty of people that do still care about Christmas, even if you personally don't know it. A lot of people just aren't assholes about it and have to advertise it everywhere you go. And people, the kind of people that want to force us all to say Merry Christmas are in the extreme minority, I feel. You know,
as well as the people who literally actually say Bah Humbug. There ain't too many of them either.
Right. Most people, like generally speaking, most people enjoy the holidays in a general sense, you know,
even if they don't shove tinsel up their own ass. Yeah, they exactly. Still get into the spirit.
Even dipshits like us who like try to make this our own year round thing. You know, we do it because I do it. I don't know about you, John. I do it because I actually do enjoy it. And I actually do kind of get a kick out of celebrating the holidays and observing everything that goes on and just being a part of it. And I don't feel the need to when I say advertise, I mean like wear Christmas shirts and yell Merry Christmas at people. You know, obviously we want to promote the show and we want the show to do very well, wink, wink. But we're not going to shove Christmas down your throats. You're here because you're like us and you enjoy listening to us talk about Christmas movies. But, you know, we're not going to go out onto a street corner and force it on anybody. Unless you want to vote for us in the poll that we're currently still a part of. Go to our website and we will link you to...
shove Christmas down people's throats.
I'm doing it right now. No, I'll put that in the show notes. There's still time to vote if you want to do it, but we'll got to get back to this thing because we want to wrap this up. Where were we?
Okay, so Santa has found Iggy and everything now. And
yes.
And the mayor is still being too busy with guys from the corporation, proper noun, want to, like, tear down, they want to, I don't know, pave paradise and put up a parking lot or something, maybe?
Pretty much. Like I think their basic plan is to tear down Main Street and rebuild it as a mini mall. That was kind of their plan.
Which, that's not what giant corporations do. Giant corporations build the mini mall on the edge of town where there's nothing built anyway.
Right. To destroy Main Street.
Yeah. You don't literally destroy Main Street. You do it figuratively, and then don't worry about it, because who cares?
Yeah, you destroy Main Street through capitalism, not with a bulldozer.
Yeah, then then later someone comes with a bulldozer and puts condos there instead. Exactly. That's how it works. So, the elves help Iggy build his dad's booth, which is weird that he's like, hey, 10-year-old son, build my fucking Christmas festival booth for me.
Mm-hmm. And so then Iggy, like, kind of pawns it off on Jingle and Jangle. And then the film does this thing where, like, we see time-lapse photography of Eddie Griffin and Ethan Suplee literally building the set for the movie they're in. Which is fun. I don't think I've ever seen that in a movie before. Movies don't typically ask the actors to build the sets themselves. But this one did. Because we're working on presumably on a budget of, like, $50.
Yeah, it's like the budget is $1,000 and like $950 of it went to a gun to hold to John Goodman's head to keep him on set.
Yeah, I mean, with the pearl inlays and the name etched into it so that we know it's a gun for John Goodman's head, like, you know, you can't just point any old pistol at him. You have to make it nice. You have to be fancy about it. John Goodman's not going to react to anything less. John Goodman don't give a shit, you know? John Goodman is one of our national treasures.
Just suffice it to say, at this point in the movie, it's just become a generic Christmas movie now. It's just, oh, well, we have to save Christmas because that's what we do now.
Right, like, at the tail end, the last, like, 30 minutes is trying to cram in as much, like, saccharine, like, save-the-town Christmas bullshit that it possibly can.
Because Santa makes it snow, and then everyone's happy because it's snowing in, like, probably what's supposed to be Atlanta, maybe?
I looked this up. It's Shreveport, Louisiana is where they filmed it.
Okay. Because they just say Southtown, which is just a town in the south where it never snows.
But no, Santa, he makes it snow by going to the Miser Brothers and cutting a deal. He asks the Heat Miser to turn the heat down in Southtown for just one day. And in return, he will let the Heat Miser rule the weather in the North Pole. And they also get the Snow Miser on the horn to talk about this, and Santa once again threatens to bring in their mother if they don't cooperate, and they're like, oh, no, we'll do it. So the temperature comes down, and it starts to snow during the big Christmas festival. And we get this really stupid scene where there's two booths next to each other. One is manned by the cop in town who's making snow cones, and right next door is the dog catcher who's making chili. And the dog catcher says, hey, you got your snow cone in my chili.
And I just want to throw this out there because it's kind of a, like, blink your ears, so to speak, and you miss it type thing. Of the cop is just like, no, it's probably that blue eyes from one of the airport airplane bathrooms.
And then the dog catcher licks it to make sure.
It's like, no, this doesn't taste like piss. I've tasted lots of piss, and this ain't piss.
Listen, buddy, I know piss, and this ain't piss. And then it starts fake CGI snowing everywhere. And everyone has a good time at the festival. Everyone loves it.
Until they all die of hypothermia the next day because there are these kids just playing in the snow in shorts and t-shirts.
Right, because it never snows in Louisiana. They don't know what snow is. But Iggy loves it. He thinks, oh, finally, my dad's going to stop being the mayor and he's going to come back and we're going to have a family again. And the mayor's like, well, I got to make one announcement real quick. And then it, like crushes Iggy's heart.
And Iggy's just like, I wish you died and turned into a snowman too. So he gets up on stage and like he realizes, wait, this is fucking stupid. It's Christmas. Fuck all y'all.
But what was he even going to announce? Was he just announcing that he was like running for mayor again?
He was going to announce, hey, by the way, we're tearing down Main Street and putting up a strip mall.
Oh.
That's literally what he was going to announce on like Christmas Eve.
Okay,
wait, because the shitty asshole executives are there with him on stage.
Okay, yeah. Way to fuck up the Christmas festival, Dad.
He's like, "Have Merry Christmas, everyone!" Bye. And he tells those two guys, "Yeah, I don't work on Christmas." And they're like, "You'll hurry off your job for this.
We'll have your job for this, Mayor."
Which he should sure on be like, "I'm the mayor. I own the fucking police. Hey, throw them in jail for a couple days."
Yeah, for real. Also, you know what? If you guys are really bummed out about this, you know, I'll come back in 2 days and I'll make the announcement. Fuck you. Like, it's not going to break the bank to wait 2 days. I mean, I'm pretty sure the mayor's going to destroy downtown anyway. He's just not going to do it on New Year's, on Christmas Eve, you know?
Yeah, he just realizes this is probably more like a January 3rd type of announcement.
Yeah, this is a Christmas hangover announcement. Also, the news report says this is the first snow in Southtown since the Ice Age. And I have to wonder, how does the weatherman know that?
I don't have an answer for you there.
Because it's a Christmas movie that operates on kid logic. That's the only explanation. There's really not a whole lot to say about the end of this movie, except the last scene in the movie is, you know, the Santa and the Mrs. are back, and
at the North Pole, I think, which is like half melted, so now everyone's dead because of rising ocean levels. Sorry, San Francisco.
Yeah, all the polar bears and all the penguins are gone, and I'm sure that's what they're eating. All the hors d'oeuvres are made
and
of polar bears.
Chris Kattan is dressed up like the Three Amigos, but he's also the waiter.
He's dressed up as all Three Amigos, and he's forced to deliver margaritas to all the elves as his penance for trying to take over Christmas, I guess. But that's the end of the movie. Ta-da! We did it! this is, as I'm sure you can tell, a scattershot, madcap 90 minutes of absolute nonsense. And I'm not just talking about this podcast right now. I'm talking about this movie.
Yeah, it's like, there's the 51 minutes or whatever that they took from the original one.
Then they stripped all of the songs from the original one, left one of them, and then filled it out with like 75 extra minutes of straight horse shit.
Just straight up, just this is what we do in kids' Christmas movies type shit. That's the only way to put it. It's just, why is this happening? That's what you do in kids' Christmas movies.
Right. But this is not really a kids' Christmas movie because there's not really a whole lot of kid jokes in it. There's barely even any jokes in it. It's just like a bunch of Christmas stuff happening.
Yeah, it rides that weird line of like trying to be appeal to everyone by like, it's not too offensive, but then again, they do say ass a couple times.
Right, it's like primetime network TV offensive, but it's still like a movie about Santa Claus. So you can't go too crazy with it. But yeah, this is, I don't know why they, I really don't know why they made this. I want to know who decided this was a good idea. I want to know who strong-armed Chris, not, you don't need to strong-arm Chris Kattan to do anything, but John Goodman and Eddie Griffin and all these other people, like, I don't know who had dirt on them and what the dirt was, but it must have been a doozy.
They really half-assed it, and there wasn't, I don't think, that much of a call for a live-action remake of a Rankin Bass fucking animated special.
Especially not in 2006.
No, not really.
And like, not that there would be in 2018 either, but, you know.
Yeah, but so I decided to actually go and look and see who's responsible for this pile of shit. The director is Ron Underwood. Let's see what he's responsible for. He's the director of Tremors. He should have known better. Tremors is good. The writers are Larry Wilson and Tom Martin. Larry Wilson wrote Beetlejuice. He should have known better.
He could have done something to make this better. I don't know. Yeah, so it's a lot of like Hollywood jobbers that aren't really like name talent. It's just like, yeah, people looking for a payday.
Yeah,
who made a thing.
Pretty much.
But I know there was one name in particular that piqued your interest.
Yeah, the name that jumped out at me out of the credits, though, was Frank Capra III.
Yeah.
Which, beyond the fact that it's Frank Capra's grandson, I was like, I've seen that name before in a Christmas movie. Where have I seen it before? Oh, yeah, he's the assistant director on Christmas Vacation. Among other things, he's also on the Jack Frost, the one that I hate. It's really funny looking at his Frank Capra III, like, filmography of movies he's been assistant director on, because it's, like, a weird mix of, like, good movies and just shit. Like, he was assistant director on Star Trek IV, which, that's one of the good Star Treks, right?
Yeah, it's one of the better
ones. It's even numbered.
Yeah.
Then also Christmas Vacation, but then also fucking Navy SEALs and Bram Stoker's Dracula, but then again A Few Good Men, but then again The Devil's Advocate.
But in the last year or two, he was like an AD on the most recent XXX movie and the most recent Fast and Furious movie. So I don't fucking know.
Yeah. But anyway, the really of note is that it's Frank Capra's grandson. He was the assistant director on the Jack Frost, the shitty one that we haven't talked about yet, right, as opposed to the shitty one we did talk about.
There's not really a non-shitty Jack Frost, to be perfectly frank.
It's just a question of, is it shitty because it's a dumb horror movie, or is it shitty because it's literally the worst movie ever made?
Right.
And then also on, what was the other one I said? Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, like, this movie came, like, a couple of years before Fox and NBC and I think ABC does it too, but like before all these networks got onto the train of like doing live theatrical productions of like musicals and shit. You know how they've done like the live version of Grease, and they did the live version of they've done a live version of A Christmas Story, which we kind of need to hunt down and watch for this show. But like all these like live musical productions on TV, like this kind of predates all those by a few years, and I feel like this is partly responsible for it, because there's no other excuse for any of that shit to happen.
Yeah. At the same time, if they would have just made like a live action stage remake of You're Without Santa Claus, it would have been better. Like there's no way it couldn't have been better.
Right. And if they had actually made it like a campy musical and really just played up the sort of the theatricality of it, like this could have been a fun thing, but instead they decided to make it like a mid-2000s, like shitty TV movie. And it's just nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what else there is to say about it. It is a fat lot of nothing riding on what little goodwill you have for one of the lesser Rankin-Bass specials.
Yes. And the last like interesting item of note here is that 2 years after this came out, an actual animated sequel to The Year Without Santa Claus came out, The Miser Brothers Christmas. And it actually like brought back a bunch of the cast members from the original cartoon, and it's animated in the stop motion style like the original was. And I think it like completely ignores the fact that this even exists, which I think is probably for the best.
Oh God, I just remember something terrible.
What's that?
Because I was looking at the IMDb page and it mentions the movie connection to mention South Park, and like, oh, that's right, they do mention South Park. That's how Eddie Griffin knows where to find kids, because he's seen South Park and kids hang out at school on South Park.
Yeah, and I feel
which
like
is just the most like baffling fucking like, are you just like saying South Park for a cheap pop from idiots who are going to be like, eh, they said the show that says ass on it,
I guess. But it's the same thing as like showing a clip from, you know, Soul Calibur and Mortal Kombat. Like, who is that for? It's not for anybody. It's just to fill space.
That's... Yeah, it's just to fill space and what like the 65-year-old writer thinks kids like.
I guess. I don't have any other explanation for it. But yeah, John, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that I forced you to watch this. And
yeah, Brad was smart enough to fake sick.
Yeah, yeah. R.I.P. Brad, who faked sick and is now better than us.
And now you get to hear Felix on the microphone because he wants to say hi.
Hey, Felix, what's happening? Me too.
All right, this episode has a third host after all. It's Felix, my cat.
Cool. We need more cat hosts on this podcast. So, hey, John, we got to do that thing again. It's crankometer time on this show.
Oh, God. Okay.
Which I feel is going to be fairly straightforward this time, because I think we feel the same way.
This is a very bad Christmassy movie. So
on our crankometer is an X and Y axis scatter plot where we rate these movies based on The x-axis is how Christmassy they are, and the y-axis is the quality quotient, how good the film actually is. So, John, on our x-axis, where do you place A Year Without a Santa Claus? How Christmassy is this movie?
Well, I mean,
it's pretty fucking Christmassy, which I hate to say.
They didn't fuck up the message completely, or really too much at all. I mean, they really just had to, like, repeat what Year Without Santa Claus said.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give it really high marks, because John Goodman's little, like, piss baby Santa at the beginning of the movie was really fucking annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they dropped that off in terms of just general generic boilerplate Christmas shit. I mean, I'll say a 3.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3. Like, it definitely deserves to sit in the positives, but I'm not going to be too positive about it, because
yeah,
it kind of just exists.
We've seen better.
Yeah, I've seen a lot better as far as Christmas stuff goes. So positive 3, sure. But then on the y-axis, how good is this, really?
Well, like I said before, I'll give it a point for Jack-O-Lantern's Hercules. That is a very good, funny choice.
And I will give it 1 point for it's life's too short to do paperwork.
Okay, so we'll say a -3 then.
Yeah, -3.
I'm happy with that.
A +3, -3.
Brad, what do you think?
Yes, hello. This is Brad, and definitely not a robot. Anime Splatoon Nintendo games. Well, I'll see you guys later. I have business things to do.
Yeah, thanks for that, Brad. We appreciate it.
So, I think it's kind of funny thinking about this Year Without Santa Claus movie. It has 45 reviews on IMDb. 43 of those have gave it a star rating of some sort. 20 of them, I counted, 20 of those ratings are ones.
Okay.
And only 10 of them are 6 or above.
All right.
And one of those reviews that's a 9 out of 10, the review is just like, I was an extra in this movie. And that's pretty much all the review says.
Wow.
But this just led me into like a horrible like non-flashback of something I saw the other day. A fucking trailer for a movie coming out called Blockers. Do you know about this movie?
Yeah, I've seen trailers for this.
I will read you the one-sentence blurb of this movie on IMDb. Three parents try to stop their daughters from having sex on prom night. It's literally the fucking Dads Against Daughters Dating shirt, except they made it into a movie.
Oh, God. There's nothing better than having to censor your own goddamn movie title because you made it a fucking R-rated term.
I mean,
Blockers means literally nothing. Nobody says that. Nobody has ever called anybody a blocker, unless you're a fucking football player.
I mean, I know that I sometimes say a lot that some things are, like, the nature of, like, human endeavor, but this might be it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't John Cena in that?
Yeah, John Cena and Ike Barinholtz and a bunch of the people you never fucking heard of are in it.
God.
I think the worst part about it is I'm looking at this IMDb page, and there's a picture of the fucking Ready Player One movie on this page, and Ready Player One is not the worst movie on this page I'm looking at.
Which is impressive, considering what you're looking at.
Yeah. Oh, dear Lord. Don't go give Ready Player One money, by the way. Just don't. I don't care if you want to watch Ready Player One, but like, go pirate it instead. Don't give them money for it.
Look, we're recording this before Ready Player One comes out, so we obviously haven't seen it yet, but we can pretty damn well guarantee you it's going to suck.
It's based on Ready Player One. Of course it's going to fucking suck.
Yeah. Unless it's a Christmas movie, you know, don't look for a full review here anytime soon.
No, I will just say, I personally, Johnny Five the Human Robot, I personally completely 100% endorse piracy of specifically Ready Player One. Don't give anyone money for it.
Do you remember the 80s? Do you remember?
Not really, no. It's kind of a haze for me.
Remember Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? The classic 80s hit of our youth, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I will say one thing positive about the couple reviews I read for Ready Player One, the movie. The reviews do take the time to point out that the movie does not have a 45-minute segment that's just a reenactment of war games like the fucking book does. So it has that going for it, at least. The fact that it's not just partially just a reenactment of war games.
But it is still like a 2-hour act of pop culture gatekeeping, right?
Pretty much, yeah, but it sounds like any saving graces it has are just because Spielberg is still a competent director.
Right. That's like the only thing that
You can't take that away from him.
The only excuse I would have for wanting to see the movie is to see how Spielberg treats that material. Because the material itself is pretty toxic, if you ask me, and I don't really want any part of it. But if Spielberg can like filter it through his thickest like nostalgia filter and just make a fucking fun movie out of it, you know, then more power to him. But I kind of doubt it. So anyway,
yeah, I mean, honestly, just in general, if you want to see Ready Player One, just go watch Stranger Things again.
Yeah,
you'll get a better experience out of it, and it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. And Stranger Things does it so much better than it has any right to, really. But you know, we can talk about Stranger Things another day. I want to end this podcast so that I can go do something else with my time.
All right. So yeah, well, this is -3. Don't watch it. I don't know how you'd watch it anyway. I don't know why Joe has this on DVD. I don't know why this is on DVD. I don't think they show it on TV anymore at Christmas time. They realize that they could just keep showing Christmas Vacation instead.
Yeah. But just for the fun of it, let me look up something real quick here. The Year Without a Santa Claus cannot be found streaming, so you're not going to find it in the wild. Lucky you. And it is only available on DVD, which I now have, and it lives in my house. And I have to deal with that for the rest of my life. That's my burden to bear, not yours. But I hope that this hour of podcasting has been a revelation to you, to know that this is something you must absolutely steer clear of.
Yeah, now you know that this exists and that you wish you didn't know that.
Yes. This is by far like one of the worst things we've ever watched. Like, our score for it is kind of academic, but I really genuinely hated watching this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that void, because the other things we watch, like, there's a lot to be mad about and a lot to enjoy and how shitty it is. This is just, it's so much nothing.
Yeah, like, I mean, Christmas Shoes, say what you want about Christmas Shoes, at least it believes in itself. This movie is pure just
yeah, this is just like a fucking cargo cult of a movie. It's just like, oh, we do this because this is what you do in movies.
This is the cinematic equivalent of the Pacific Garbage Patch. Like, it's just this giant hunk of plastic that exists for no reason other than the fact that humans are terrible people. And I hate it. This might be the worst thing we've watched since A Cosmic Christmas. Do you even remember that?
What the fuck is Cosmic Christmas? Is that shitty 70s cartoon we watched?
Yeah, the one where the aliens come down and ask about what Christmas is.
I hardly even remember that. God. I hopefully this gets relegated in the same pile of things we've watched that aren't, like, basically the only things I can remember right now that we've watched are Christmas Vacation and Elves.
Okay, here, let me hit you with this last one. Would you say this is better or worse than The Christmas Dragon? You know what? I'm going to say this is worse.
I know the name Christmas Dragon. That's one we've watched very recently.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember what the fuck Christmas Dragon even is.
It was like a Mormon production of like some kid's Skyrim fan fiction about dragons and shit.
Little Game of Thrones, okay.
Little Game of Thrones, yeah.
I'm going to say Little Game of Thrones was better. Don't watch this.
Please, for the love of God, do not. Hey, so if you want to get at us and tell us that you've watched this, there's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can go to Twitter, where our Twitter handle is @ChristmasCreeps. You can go to Facebook.com/ChristmasCreeps. That is our Facebook page that we rarely ever use. You can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Go to iTunes, leave a subscription and a rating. That's not the right way to say that, but that doesn't matter because I'm fading fast. And finally, we will put a link once again in our show notes. The time is closing for this Best of the Triad Awards thing that we're in right now, where we're up for the award of Best Triad Podcast. We'll put a link in our show notes and on our website for it. Go there. Please vote for us if you would. Voting ends, I think, April 1st. And with all of that said, but anyway, it's late March. It's sunny out. The trees are blooming. I would rather be outside right now. So that's going to be the end of this podcast for this week. We will be back.
I'm going to go play Stardew Valley.
We will be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new episode for you. So until next time, I am Joseph Wade.
I am Johnny Five the Human Robot.
And I am Bradford, who has been here the entire time.
Wishing you, please do not ever watch this film. Good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.